Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee present one full hour of star-studded entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. Here with us to help celebrate the coming of the new year are Lionel Barrymore and Beulah Bondi, who'll appear in a powerful drama. A special guest is Bill Stern, NBC sports announcer and commentator, News of the Day, to give you a sports-eye view of the Rose Bowl game. Also, Douglas MacPhail, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Meredith Wilson. And here is your host for this evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we're all bubbling over with the New Year's spirit and raring to go. Meredith Wilson and the orchestra start us swinging out this old year with one of his very special arrangements of a tune that is indicative of love. Ah, love, that certain indefinable something that seems to be especially prevalent and significant around this year holiday season. The song, When You're in Love, from the new MGM picture, The Girl Downstairs. Play it with feet, Maestro. Meredith, that was a grand arrangement.
Thank you, Robert. You know, it seems you've said something nice like that about my music all year.
Well, Meredith, your music is always good. But tonight it seems to have even an extra something in it.
Well, you know, our last program of the year and all kind of does something to all of us, I guess.
I kind of hate to see the old year going, huh?
Yes, sirree. It's been a banner year for me, Bob. 1938 has seen the fulfillment of my fondest dreams.
Well, that's fine. Your music, I suppose.
No, this past year I've solved more riddles than ever before.
Riddles? I'd hope you've forgotten about those.
Oh, no, I got a new one last night. What's the difference between vegetable soup and hash? You give up?
Well, just a second. Give me a chance.
Time's up. There isn't any difference. Vegetable soup and hash are the same thing, only vegetable soup is looser.
I give up.
Well, I guess I'm too quick for you, Bob. I'll have some more new ones for you at the New Year's Eve party at my house. You're going to come, of course.
I can't wait.
Besides riddles, there'll be ice cream and cake and... post office and spin the bottle and musical chairs.
Sure sounds exciting. Whoopee.
Everybody on the program will be there, Bob, and don't take this as a hint, but I think Frank Morgan and Warren Hull are going to help out with the food. They're going to bring a turkey.
A turkey? How do you know?
Well, I overheard Frank and Warren talking about my party, and Frank said, let's go over and give Wilson the bird.
All right, playboy, we'll all be there.
Righto.
Since Doug McPhail made his first appearance on our Good News program last January, he has made rapid strides. You can see him in Sweethearts with Jeanette McDonald and Nelson Eddy. At the present time, he's being kept busy on the picture Honolulu. All in all, it looks like old man 38 has been mighty nice to our Doug. And here he is singing Irving Berlin's The Night is Filled with Music. Pick it up from here, Doug.
The night is filled with music. The sky is filled with blue. The air is filled with fragrant perfume, telling me that spring is in bloom. The path is filled with moonlight. The grass is filled with you. And I'd be filled with a heavenly feeling if my arms were filled with you. Night is filled with music. The sky is filled with blue. The air is filled with fragrant perfume, telling me that spring is in bloom. The path is filled with moonlight. The grass is filled with dew, and I'd be filled with a heavenly feeling if my arms were filled with you.
Here, ladies and gentlemen, Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Well, the Christmas holidays are over, and Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is reading the paper in his study, trying to relax his jangled nerves.
Oh, certainly it's a pleasure to get out of these cheap shoes. Oh, my feet. I guess I can nap for a while before dinner.
Hello, Daddy.
Goodbye, Snooks.
Huh?
I said goodbye, Snooks.
Where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere, but you are.
Why?
Because I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I need rest. I'll go upstairs and play.
Why you got your shoes off, Daddy?
Because they hurt my feet.
Why?
It's starting already. The shoes hurt my feet because they don't fit properly. They use the wrong kind of last.
Huh?
Before they can make shoes, they have to make the last first.
The last is first?
Yes.
Is the first last?
No.
Why?
Because I'm not talking about last and first, like in front and behind. That kind of last is always last. But the last I mean is the one they make first before they make the shoes second.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine. Now run along and let me rest.
All right.
Oh.
Daddy!
Oh, Snooks, don't do that.
Do what, Daddy?
Yell in my ear like that.
Huh?
Yell in my ear!
All right. Hooray!
Oh! And they say there's peace in America. What do you want now?
What does dawn mean?
Huh? Oh, dawn. Oh, that means when you show something up like a star.
Daddy.
Well?
Can you show off the bedpost?
Oh, of course not.
Then why did Santa Claus say it?
What are you talking about?
he thought I was asleep when I seen him come in my bedroom.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh. And when he bumped his foot, he said, "Darn that bedpost."
I did not. I mean, why, you must have been dreaming. Now forget about it and leave me alone.
All right. Daddy.
What is it?
Tony said there ain't no Santa Claus.
Oh, he did he?
Uh-huh. He said it's just like the devil. It's only your father.
Now, what kind of children are you playing with? I never heard such talk. Now, go upstairs at once.
If I go, will you buy me a lollipop?
I won't buy you anything.
Darn it.
Sure. Don't you say that word.
Why?
Because it's not nice.
I like it. Darn it, darn it, darn it.
Darn it. Now, don't you make me angry. Now, listen. I want you to promise never to say that word anymore. And I'll give you 10 cents.
All right.
Now, here's a dime. Now, leave Daddy alone. Well, what are you laughing at?
I know a word worth 50 cents.
What? Well, that's the limit, darn it. I mean, you see, you're making me lose my temper again. And I just got through making my New Year's resolutions.
What, Sam?
Oh, people are supposed to resolve to correct their bad habits every time the New Year comes around.
When is it coming, Daddy?
On the 1st of January.
When is that?
The 1st comes after the last of December. First comes the last and then the 1st.
Are you going to make shoes again?
Now, what's that got to do with shoes?
He said the first is the last and the shoes is the second and it's in front behind.
Do you feel all right, son?
I feel fine, Dad.
Well, I'm talking about the months of the year. Haven't you ever seen a calendar?
Uh-huh.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
What's it look like?
I don't know.
You've seen a dozen calendars. That cardboard thing hanging on the kitchen wall is a calendar.
Oh. Who made it?
Oh, it's a thing almost as old as time. It's been in use since the days of our forefathers.
Who's forefathers?
Yours and mine.
And I got forefathers.
Pause.
Where's the other three?
There isn't any other three.
You said I got four.
When I say forefathers, I don't mean forefathers. I mean forefathers. Now what's the matter?
You're always trying to mix me up.
No, I'm just trying to explain the calendar. You've seen the one on the kitchen wall, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's marked off in days and months. It's a method of distributing time into certain periods adapted to the purpose of civil life. And we got it from the Romans.
No, we did not.
What do you mean, we did not? And where did we get it from?
Mama got it from a Chinese laundry.
Oh, what's the use? Anyway, the calendar tells us what day it is.
Don't you know what day it is?
Of course I do. It's Thursday.
Why do you need the calendar?
Well, how else would you know it's Thursday?
I know.
How?
Because it's the cook's day off.
Oh, nonsense. Suppose the cook was off on Friday. Would you still think it was Thursday?
No.
Well, why not?
Because he goes off on Thursday.
I know that. But if you didn't have a calendar, how could you tell it was Friday?
The cook comes back.
Well, that stops me. Just the same, you'd better learn a little about the months of the year. Now, it's all summed up in a very simple little poem. You want to learn it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. 30 days half September. August, May, and 30 days half September. Oh, I'll teach it to you tomorrow.
Daddy don't know it. Daddy don't know it.
I do, too. 30 days half September.
April
June, and November.
All the rest
have 31, excepting February, which has 28. Who says I don't know it? Ha-ha!
Ha-ha! Goodbye, Daddy.
Oh, where are you going, Snow?
I'm going to learn some more poems so you can teach me.
Now here's Warren Hull.
Thanks, Bob.
Friends, I don't suppose there's a woman who doesn't like to receive praise from her family, from her friends, for a meal well prepared or a job well done. And naturally, when Maxwell House Coffee can help some woman to earn that praise, we feel proud, too. And we know that Maxwell House has been doing just that, for millions of letters have been sent us from all over the country during the past 50 years. Here's one recent letter I'd like especially to read. It's from Mrs. Carl McFarland of 5860 Whittier Boulevard, Los Angeles, California. She writes,
"My husband and I are great coffee drinkers, and for us, no coffee compares with Maxwell House. You see, we've used it for the past 6 years. Oh, there have been times that we changed to some other brand on the advice of someone else, but we always return to our old friend Maxwell House. Of course, we think the new Maxwell House is superb. There's no comparison for richness, flavor, and freshness. we can't praise it too highly. For anyone who enjoys a really good cup of coffee as we do, we enthusiastically suggest Maxwell House.
I hope Mrs. McFarland is listening to hear our thanks for her nice letter. Friends, for 50 years, we've worked to make Maxwell House the finest possible coffee. And we believe you will find it so, too. For Maxwell House today is richer, smoother, and more delicious than ever before. Not only has Joel Cheek's original secret blend been further enriched, but due to the remarkable radiant roast process, each coffee bean is roasted evenly all the way through, so you get more of the true flavor of these superb coffees. Tomorrow, discover for yourself how much more flavor and more satisfaction and what a wealth of cheery stimulation this new Maxwell House brings you. Buy a pound, or if you have a large family, you will find the 2-pound can convenient and economical. Now is the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
Tonight in the MGM Concert Hall, Meredith Wilson plays a melody that, although written 48 years ago, is being played and sung as one of today's newest song hits. Since this melody has been exploited in the popular style, it has made more money for the estate of its composer than all of the immortal compositions he wrote during his lifetime. Most of you know it as My Reverie, adapted by Larry Clinton. But Meredith plays it for you now as it was originally written in the year 1890, one of music's most beautiful classics, Reverie by Claude Debussy. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a well-known fact that the sporting eyes of America will be gazing westward next Monday when the undefeated Blue Devils from Duke University in North Carolina meet the champions of the Pacific Coast, the University of Southern California, in the annual Rose Bowl game. Millions of people will listen to this classic on the air, and what they'll hear will be a masterly, constantly exciting report of the game created on the spot for them by the man I want you to meet now, NBC's sports announcer and commentator, News of the Day, Bill Stern.
Thank you very much, Bob Young.
Bill, there are a couple of things about your profession I'd like to know.
Well, fire away and I'll make a guess.
Now, when I go to a game, I can barely tell which team has the ball, let alone who's running with it. How do you follow all the plays so well?
Well, Bob, as NBC sports announcer and commentator for the News of the Day newsreel, I have an opportunity of seeing and carefully studying the motion pictures of all football games. And, as a rule, I spend a couple of days each week before a game watching both teams at practice. So that way I get an idea of how the plays go as well as which players to watch.
Well, that should help. The other feature of your performance that baffles me is how you manage to, well, keep talking when there's nothing going on. And very good, too.
Well, thanks, Bob. That's a matter of preparation. Maybe you notice that in between plays, I don't fill in with ad-libs about how many fur coats there are in the stands or with the stuff about the blonde that just arrived in Tunnel 8.
Oh, you don't notice the blonde, huh?
Bob, don't hide it. I didn't say that. But I don't talk about it. I try to fill in with stuff about the previous plays, yardage figures, kicking figures, etc.
I see. Well, it sounds like it's a tougher racket than I thought. Have you seen Duke in action, Bill?
Yes, I saw them back east. And believe me, Bob, they're a swell team.
Well, come on now, Bill. Break down and give us a quiet, confidential prediction on the Rose Bowl game.
Well, now let me see. We're now here in Hollywood, California. And I look into this sea of happy faces. Well, I suppose I'd get killed if I didn't pick Southern Cal.
Well, as long as you're sure of that, Bill, I'd like to get a few dollars down on the game.
No, turn it off and turn the motor off, too. Last time I ever listened to the radio.
Frank Morgan.
Hello, Bob.
What are you beefing about now?
Bob, I've just been listening to some radio program in my car. My heart bleeds for the American people. The idea of foisting off on the public a phony football expert making predictions.
Frank!
That he... What?
Who was it?
I don't know, but he was talking to an infantile master of ceremonies who kept calling him Bill. I never heard such...
Frank!
What?
You know who you were listening to?
No, but there's one thing I will say. I've never been a great admirer of Meredith Wilson's music, as you know. But the orchestra I just heard was even worse.
What's this?
Oh, Meredith, I just heard some band absolutely slaughter Debussy's Reverie.
You did?
Yes.
You should have heard us playing.
Go away, Meredith.
Oh, sure.
Honestly, Bob, I can't get over that expert's prediction. Imagine him trying to pick the winner of the Rose Bowl game. Bob, I think your pal here has a cold. You better gargle, son.
Now, wait a minute, Frank. You better go easy with the football expert stuff.
I know what I'm talking about. Do you know anything about football?
A little.
A little. When you talk to me, Young, you're talking to a pigskin encyclopedia. Who's the sensational right guard for Travis College in 1921?
Fred Flafter, 191 pounds.
Flafter. Yeah. Well, who was the famous quarterback for the Mizzlies in 1920?
George Kravis, 155 pounds and a blonde.
She was? Kravis. The man's right. Son, you seem to know a good deal about football.
Thank you.
Oh, Frank.
Yes. You're really in a box this time. I want you to shake hands with the greatest football broadcaster alive, Bill Stern.
Well, I'll be glad to. Where is he?
Right here. This is Bill Stern.
Football Stern, yes. Well, I've got to be... I think I hear my car knocking. I'll just...
Frank, come here. Make like a football windbag.
Young, someday you'll go too far. But not too far for me. Mr. Stern, do you recall the famous 11 that played at Rose Tech in 1918?
Why, yes, Frank. I was head coach there in 1918.
Oh, it's fourth down, Frank. You better punt.
Punt. Mr. Stern, how far back do you go?
Oh, around 1915, I should say.
1915. Then you wouldn't remember the great 1912 team at Hartley.
No.
Oh, there was a team. Unbeaten, unscored on, and untied for three seasons. When I was carrying the ball...
Frank!
Yes?
You're going to represent yourself as a member of the great Hartley team of 1912?
All-American Morgan, sir. Halfback for Notre Dame, quarterback for Harvard, nickelback for the bottle.
What's that?
The Blue Devils have been tampering with my notes. I was the only quadruple threat man in the history of the game.
Triple threat isn't big enough for him.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting, Mr. Morgan. I never heard of a quadruple threat man before.
Kick, run, pass, and fumble.
I'll bet you were dynamite in the huddle.
Was I? I can see myself to this day. My battered 11, grim faces, covered with mud. I pleaded with them to join me in a terrific dive. A drive. I cursed at them. I cajoled them, threatened, wheedled. We must cross that last white line. The referee's whistle blew. The quarterback called the signal. The ball was snapped. The play began. And suddenly, I felt a blinding pain as something struck me at the base of my spine.
You fell off the bench.
Yes. No! Oh, I've got... Where am I?
Well, you seem to have played a lot of different teams, Mr. Morgan.
Yes, well, you see, the eligibility rules were not as strict in those days, my boy. I dare say you'd be very surprised, for example, if I told you I once attended two universities simultaneously.
I'd be surprised if it was true.
I see. Mr. Stern, would you be surprised if it was true?
No, not at all.
See? Here's a man that doesn't know me. We could use a chap like you on this program, Mr. Stern.
Why were you going to two colleges at once, touchback?
Colleges. Yes. Well, I was very anxious to pursue a course in the philosophy of integral relations, which could only be attained under the famous Professor Krabkin at Mildew College. At the same time, you understand, I was studying the mathematics of poetry under Professor Trasko at Wheaton's University.
I suppose you played on both football teams.
Exactly. I was a Mildew end and at the same time a Wheaton's halfback.
It's amazing how little you've changed since 1912.
A barnyard witticism.
All right.
I played brilliantly for both teams during the entire season without anyone suspecting my double life. But imagine my consternation when it was announced just before the Christmas holidays that Mildew and Wheaton were to meet in a postseason game in the famous Finger Bowl.
Well, now, how could you play on both teams, Mr. Morgan?
Well, it was a grueling experience, Mr. Stern. I was practically exhausted before the game began, running back and forth between the rival locker rooms, getting last-minute instructions. I was in a sweat.
Nervous, huh?
No, I was wearing two uniforms. Well, the game began, and I started for Wheaton. The Mildew team was frantic at my disappearance.
Well, didn't they recognize you on the other side?
No. I wore a large nose guard, which obstructed my vision part of the time. Despite this handicap, I managed to score a touchdown for Wheaton and kicked the goal just as the first quarter ended.
It's now 7-0, favor of Wheaton.
Yes. When the teams changed sides, I removed my nose guard and pitched in for dear old Mildew. It didn't take me long to make another touchdown for Mildew, kicking the goal while the Wheaton coach searched frantically for his ace blocker.
That's you.
Yes.
The score is now tied 7-7.
I kept things even to the half, but during the rest period, I was further exhausted, receiving massages from the trainers on both teams.
Who did you start for in the second half?
Well, I went out to fight for the motley and blue of old Wheaton. But by prodigious running and tackling, I managed to keep the score even till almost the end of the fourth quarter.
Well, now, which team did you want to see win, Mr. Morgan?
I was torn between conflicting loyalties, Mr. Stern. I loved the motley and blue of old Wheaton. But when I looked up in the stands and saw the piebald and gray of Mildew, a pang ran through my moleskin.
What happened, drawback?
I finally got the ball for Wheaton. I ripped through a hole in center and with magnificent courage dived through the whole Mildew team. There were just 15 seconds to play, and I was about to cross the line for a touchdown.
You were going
to
let Wheaton win?
Wait. I was crossing the 5-yard line at 40 miles an hour when I suddenly realized I'd made the wrong decision. By a superhuman effort, I stopped in midair, tackled myself, fumbled for Wheaton, recovered for Mildew, and started back. I changed uniforms as I crossed the 50-yard line and streaked for the Wheaton goal. The Mildew stands went crazy. The clock showed 2 seconds to play, and the whistle blew just as I flew across the goal line.
That was wonderful, Frank. What made you change your mind?
Well, I just happened to remember my car was parked at that end, and I didn't want to get caught in the rush. Well, so long, Bill. Good luck in the Rose Bowl.
Right now, Warren, it's just about time to pause for our familiar Thursday evening custom.
Righto, Bob. And what better way to toast the new year than with a cup of steaming, fragrant Maxwell House coffee and the music of Meredith Wilson. Ready, Meredith? We now pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
1938, drawing to a close, Meredith Willson brings you a review of songs, many of which he introduced for the first time on the air on our Good News program. Inasmuch as we only have 1 hour on the air, you can see the spot Meredith was in. So he just put the names of all the songs into a hat, blindfolded the studio janitor, and let him do the drawing. Among the numbers he picked was one that I had a hand in introducing myself. And if I do say so, it's a real classic. Start your song review, Meredith. This is a happy little ditty. I know the music isn't pretty. You know the words are not so witty. Anyone can sing this song except me. Humpty Dumpty had a big fall, and thanks very much for the use of the hall.
I must say the music isn't pretty, must say the words are not so witty. This is a happy little ditty.
Anyone can sing this song.
And got together and they decided to become a week. As they grew into the 50 weeks, decided to become a year. That's why 60 minutes, every hour, every day, every week, and every year. All I do is dream of you.
Dress.
Oh, it's black.
No, your party dress isn't black.
It is too. I fell in the mud.
Well, the color of the basket is yell.
Rah!
What are you crying for?
Just me to yell.
I mean the color was yellow.
Oh, it was my little yellow basket. I like it.
And now, everybody's favorite of the past year, by Mere Bister Shane.
Thank you.
And now, we come to a real highlight in our show, the MGM Theater of the Air, where our MGM producer-director, Edgar Selwyn, presents these great stars of screen and stage, Mr. Lionel Barrymore, Miss Beulah Bondi, supported by Mr. Irvel Alderson. Mr. Selwyn presents an original play by Sidney Cook and Hartman Renau, entitled Deep Rooted. The time, a cheerless October day early in the present century. The place, the kitchen of Caleb Jason's old farmhouse, high on a cliff overlooking the sea, somewhere along the rugged coast of Maine. As the scene opens, we find Caleb, played by Lionel Barrymore, thrusting a handful of pamphlets into the old wood-burning cook stove.
Well, I'm packed and ready to go, Caleb.
So am I, Martha, and wishing Peter'd hurry along.
Tain't easy, though, leaving a place you've called home for 20 years. Tain't easy, even for a housekeeper.
Well, it'll seem strange-like for a while not having Robert and you about.
Olive said I'd never live with Jenny.
I thought 'twas a husband you couldn't abide.
Well, don't like being beholden to nobody, not even my own sister. Caleb, is Peter fetching the deed of sale?
Yeah, and driving me to the station after we leave you at Jenny's.
What are you burning there? We ain't got need for a fire any longer.
Oh, just papers, Martha.
Papers?
Yeah.
Looks like timetables to me.
Maybe so, but they ain't.
Don't remember seeing them when I was picking up around.
Well, I've kept them put away, mostly.
Looks like they got pictures on them.
Yeah, well, some of them have.
What of?
Oh, oranges and things.
Orange?
Yeah. Oranges growing on the trees. And figs and dates. And pictures of palm trees. And flowers and grass growing green in the middle of winter, Martha.
Well, I never. What you been doing with such things, Caleb?
Looking at them. Ain't that what pictures is for? Looking at?
So that's where you got this notion to sell out lock, stock, and barrel and go to California, huh? From looking at pictures.
Maybe. But I've been reading, too, about how pretty it is out there. And listen to them that's been there. 30 years I've been doing it, listening and reading and wanting.
And you never said nothing, Caleb. Never let no one know. Never let on to no one.
Let on? What good's that got me? Letting on wouldn't have set me free from what I had to do. Would it take Brother Robert off in the bed where he lay crippled all these years?
30 years is a long time to be wanting something.
Yeah, it is. A mortal long time.
There is them as would have found a way to have him took care of and done what they was a-wanting.
Yeah. And there's them that steals and them that kills, too, Martha. But I ain't one of them. T'was fitting I should stay here and see him cared for.
And you done that, Caleb. I couldn't have been your housekeeper all this time without knowing how fine you done your duty to him.
Well, he was my brother. Blood ties ain't easy broke for such as me. Death breaks him, nothing else. Lying yonder in his bed, he held me here as long as breath was in him. Held me to this place I've hated. Well, the last tie's broke. My waiting's done. What time's left's my own for using as I like.
There's other ties than kinship hold men, Caleb. And other kinships strong and deep as that of blood.
Well, maybe, for some.
For some, it's as small a thing as seeing smoke come curling from the chimney of the house they was born in. Or the hearing of a nor'easter when it whistles through the branches of the tree they used to climb as young'uns. Or just the smell of dirt new turn for seeding. Them things tie men, Caleb. And hold them fast.
Oh, smoke the same from any chimney, Martha. Wind whistles through trees the whole world over. And dirt, well, dirt's only the place you happen to be digging in. Such things only ties fools.
Fools? Oh, fiddlesticks. Else all your people for some time back have been fools. And they won't. They stayed here hard as it was for them to eke out a living. Because here was things they'd grown up with. And growing up with, had learned to love. Your great-grandfather set the seed down deep and lasting when he built that
cabin over yonder. The roots went deeper when your own grandfather built this house where you was born and where your father was born before you. Hard? Certain. But they bore its hardness. And their blood's in you, Caleb Jason.
What do you suppose holds Peter? He was going to stop by Judge Brown's for the deed and come directly here. Don't appear to be coming down the road yet. As far as I can see from this window, at least.
Terrible impatience you are, strikes me. A few more minutes after 30 years of waiting shouldn't vex you.
Well, trains don't wait for nobody. What ails them cows today? It ain't milking time yet, yet you'd think they knowed I was going.
They'll be a-wondering tonight when they hear a strange step coming to feed them.
Yeah?
Suppose Fawn and Brownie will hold back their milk a spell under Peter's hand.
Yeah, cows is funny that way.
Yeah, like to know who's taken what they have to give.
Yeah, it seems almost personal with them sometimes.
Especially when they was raised by one man like Brownie and Fawn was, by you.
Oh, they'll get to know Peter for long, I reckon.
Certain they will. They'll forget you for long.
The pesky fog's starting to roll in. Look, Martha, northward you can hardly make out the point. Fog. How I hate the stuff. It sweeps through a body's clothes clean to his innards and turns him clammy.
Yeah, coming in fast.
There she starts. That blasted foghorn. Couldn't let me get away without you sung me one more dismal song, could you? Well, bellow away then, you harsh old devil.
Shaking your fist at it won't stop it, Caleb.
Seen the Boston boat yet. Must be she's late fighting the wind, unless the old clock's fast.
Can't. Caleb, was you figuring to take the old clock?
Figuring to take nothing.
Robert used to say, could never tell the time for none but a Jason.
Ah, sick man gets notions lying long abed.
Said it'd stop when there weren't no Jason hand to wind it. Look, Caleb, the fog's over the cliff. Night of hiding the two old pines. Great-grandfather's lingering children, your brother used to call them. Because 'twas your great-granddaddy planted them when he first come here.
Oh, yeah. I heard that tale of plenty.
Strong things they be. Deep-rooted. Even the sea winds blowing has done nothing more than lean them a trifle year by year.
Oh, there ain't nothing can stand straight against that wind blowing year in. You're out?
Robert always said they'd stand against it just so long as they was Jason's living here.
Ah, they won't fall till the time comes for them to fall, Jason or no Jason.
Well, maybe so. But sick men like your brother was see more natural of what's to come. Fog's hit him now. You've seen him for the last time, Caleb. The two old pines.
Oh, I know what you're doing, Martha. Aiming to make me homesick before I get started. It ain't no use. I've got to go. Well, that'll be Peter.
Yeah? That'll be Peter with the deed.
Come in, Peter.
Afternoon, Caleb. Martha.
Fogging up a mite.
Yes, more than a mite. Carelessly see the hitching post. Don't suppose they have no fogs where you're going, Caleb?
Certain not. Nothing but sunshine in California. Day in, day out. Ain't that how it is, Caleb?
Yeah, you brought the deed to sale, Peter?
I did.
And the money?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All's needed is your assignment.
Suppose I best glance through it.
Suppose so. The judge says 'twas all legal.
Uh-huh. Well, appears to me to be all right.
Where's your pen?
I'll get it for you, Caleb. Here it is.
Thank you. Now, let's see, Peter. I suppose I sign right here where it says...
Right there.
Uh-huh. Say, where's my spectacles, Martha? Seems like I must put them
here
in...
Here they be. First time I ever knowed you to need spectacles just for signing your name.
Seemed to me to be able to read the deed first rate just now.
Well, signing's different.
Getting a nice place here, Peter.
Yeah, I calculate twill be when time we've made a few changes.
Changes, Peter?
Yeah. Figuring to plow up the North Berry Patch and put in pay dirt.
I wouldn't if I was you. Too stony.
And figuring to sell the cows.
Sell them? To sell Fawn and Brownie?
Got enough cows of my own. You ain't signed yet, Caleb.
No. Light's getting poor. Let's have a lamp, Martha.
My, your eyes is getting bad, ain't they? Suppose your wife will be wanting some changes, too.
Yeah. She's figuring to do considerable changing about the house. Says it's too old-fashioned like tears. Got some newfangled ideas, Laura.
Here you are, Caleb. Reckon you can see all right now.
Yeah.
She thinks the house is a mite too dark for one thing and wants them two old pines cut down.
Cut down the pines, did you say, Peter?
Yeah. Let's get this done, Caleb. Here's your pen.
I don't need no pen.
What?
I ain't going to sell, Peter.
What you saying?
Not sell.
I've changed my mind.
But you can't do that, Caleb.
I've done it.
Thought 'twas agreed.
Well, agreed or not, I ain't selling.
But I've been counting on this. Planning accordingly.
I can't help it.
Oh, take like a Jason to back down.
Well, there's worse things than backing down, Peter.
Then you ain't going to California?
I ain't said so. I said I ain't going to sell.
Well, this ain't right, what you're doing, Caleb. It ain't fair to me. And I don't take it kindly. If this is a sharp trick you're playing to try to boost the price, it'll do you no good. I'll pay what I agreed to pay, not one penny more.
It ain't a trick, Peter. I ain't selling. Ever.
Is that your last word?
My last word.
Then there's nothing more to say. Good night, Peter.
I'm glad you ain't selling, Caleb.
I'm a fool, Martha, but I couldn't do it.
It'll be a comfort to you out there among strangers to know if you should ever want to come back, it'll all be here waiting for you.
The cows is getting anxious. And if I shouldn't, you can have it, Martha. You'd best stay on here anyway. You could sort of keep things going, and you wouldn't be beholden to your sister and her husband.
Oh, thanks mightily, Caleb. But I couldn't do that.
You said 'twas like home to you.
Not alone, I couldn't. Not with Robert gone and you.
Well, I reckon I better set about milking.
Well, now start supper. Griddle cakes and bacon. An omelet if you'll fetch in some eggs. Oh, here, take your muffler, Caleb.
Martha, I was thinking.
Yes, Caleb.
Supposing I wasn't to go to California.
Well, but you gotta go, Caleb. 30 years you've been waiting. You're free now. Remember what you said, what time's left your own, for using as you like. You'd not be content to stay.
Well, I don't know about that, Martha. You see, it's this way. While I was chained here, I wanted terrible to go. But I've had the fun of dreaming about it and laying awake nights and seeing myself out there enjoying everything. Living easy in the sunshine instead of this hard, cold coast. But now I'm free to go, it don't seem so tempting. Somehow, I ain't so eager to be quit of all this. You've made me see another side of things, Martha. You've made me see another side of myself that's been asleep, I calculate. A side of me that's rooted deeper than I knew. Them cows is getting anxious.
I'll get about mixing batter.
If I wasn't to go, Martha, could you see yourself staying on to sort of bear me company and look after things?
Oh, couldn't look right, Caleb. You and me here, alone.
No, I reckon not. People would talk. Well, I'll start milking. Martha, there's one way we could fix it.
what way, Caleb?
Well, we could, get married.
Oh, Caleb. I've been waiting 20 years to hear you say that.
You have, Martha?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll get on with the milking.
Fogg's lifting, Caleb. Well, I'll brew some tea for you.
Bondi and Mr. Barrymore, it's sterling performances such as you have given us here tonight that has made the MGM Theater of the Air one of the most popular portions of our program. Thank you. Being a little on the sentimental side, Doug McPhail wanted to close his radio year with the same song with which he started. He sings the first number he ever did on our Maxwell House Good News show, Song of Songs.
First we met. Do you remember, love, the words we spoke? Have you forgotten all the tender vows we made in the silent, magical moonbeam's light? Gone are the golden dreams with summer's roses, and all our tenderest vows were made but to be broken. On a song, song of memory and broken melody of love and life, nevermore for me can that melody fill the heart with the joy once it knew. Oh, night bliss, night of June and love, beneath the stars amid the roses. Oh, dream of delight that faded at dawn. Song of songs, O night of bliss, when you were my whole world of love. When you were my whole world of love.
We want to take you now back to Nashville, Tennessee in 1880. It's the annual cotillion at the famous old Maxwell House.
Oh, isn't it lovely, Bradley? The lights and the music.
It sure is, Mary Ellen. Shall we sit this waltz out? Let's go out on the terrace. It's grand out there tonight.
Oh, let's get a cup of coffee first. I see Mr. Joe Cheek standing over there. He asked me specially to taste his new coffee. He's called it Maxwell House after this very hotel.
Mmm. This tastes delicious.
Oh, I think so, too. Oh, Mr. Cheek, we think your new coffee is just marvelous.
And so it was that more than 50 years ago in the Old South, Nashville, Tennessee, the original Maxwell House blend was created. And in less than a generation, its fame had spread throughout the length and breadth of our country. People everywhere tasted this fine, mellow coffee and pronounced it perfect. But as our country has grown, modern science has grown with it.
And Maxwell House has made every effort to keep ahead of the time, to make Maxwell House the finest coffee you can buy. More than 8 years ago, a method was developed to pack Maxwell House in what is now the familiar blue super vacuum can that seals in all the rich, tempting flavor, bringing you coffee that's always roaster fresh. And now, two new ways have been found to add even greater deliciousness to the already magnificent flavor of Maxwell House. First, the famous blend has been still further improved, further enriched, to bring you coffee far richer and far smoother, an even greater measure of satisfaction. And then, a new method of roasting Maxwell House has been developed, called the Radiant Roast Process, which brings out more of the true coffee flavor than you probably have ever known before. Friends, we think the new Maxwell House today is just about the finest coffee there is. But we want you to know that we will never cease our efforts to find ways of making it still better, to bring still more pleasure to true coffee lovers. And we know people appreciate our efforts, for today more are buying Maxwell House coffee than ever before. So try a pound of the new Maxwell House in your home. We think you will say, as millions do, that now, more than ever, Maxwell House is the coffee that's good to the last drop.
Program is drawing to a close, and so is 1938. By way of expressing our appreciation of your loyal support to Maxwell House and our good news program, may I say, thanks for everything, and our best wishes for happiness. Thank you very much for everything, and for making our show a success. Also, for all the letters that you sent. They were certainly very nice ones, too. And for all your fine encouragement, we tip our hearts to you. Mr. Lionel Barrymore.
Thanks for everything. Here's your health, and may I make this toast. I hope the coming new year brings you everything that you want most.
Doug McPhail?
You know, you folks out there really gave me my start and helped me make my dreams come true. And so, for everything, my thanks to you.
Daddy Stafford.
Thanks for everything. From Snooks, to Mummy, and me.
And thanks to Danny Coy for what he put under my tree. I like them.
Just a wonderful grand new year is Frank Morgan's wish for you. May every good thing you have be multiplied by two.
Meredith.
Thanks for everything. And speaking for the choir and the boys and the girls and the band, a real happy new year. Come on, boys, let's give our audience a hand.
And so, from General Foods, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, to you, our listeners,
Happy New Year!
Oh, the great and be forgotten and ever brought to
week, ladies and gentlemen, our first big show of the new year. Be sure to join us, and also remind your friends to listen to what promises to be the fastest and best 60 minutes we have ever had the pleasure of bringing you.
Nicely said, Warren. Ladies and gentlemen, we regret that Wallace Beery, Robert Taylor, and Florence Rice couldn't be with us tonight. Well, this just about winds up the radio year for us, and as a parting thought, may I remind you that I can think of no better way for you to celebrate the new year than to take your family to your favorite motion picture theater to see Wallace Beery and Robert Taylor in Stand Up and Fight, a Mervyn LeRoy production directed by W.S. Van Dyke II. I predict it will be one of the most thrilling and exciting pictures of the new year. This is Bob Young saying good night until the first Thursday of 1939.
This is
Warren Hull wishing you a happy new year for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
KFI, Los Angeles. Beckman's January fur clearance sale.